It's again a privilege to be here with you tonight to worship together, and I hope that all of us will have childlike faith as we go forward together to behold the beauty of His countenance and to inquire in His temple while we're here in His house. The beginning place tonight, I'd like to draw your attention to a verse of Scripture found in Acts chapter 10. It's verse 34 and 35. The occasion is the Apostle Peter is preaching to Cornelius' house, and he has witnessed several things that indicate to him that these Gentiles have received something very similar to the Jews, something that previously had not happened. And Peter has this to say. It says, "Then Peter opened his mouth, and he said, 'This day I perceive that of a truth that God is no respecter of persons, but in every nation, he that feareth God and worketh righteousness is accepted with him.'" I don't want to talk a lot about what's going on in this lesson. I want to look at that last phrase, "is accepted with him." We hear a lot in the world today, especially the religious world, about acceptance. And sometimes I wonder if we really know what acceptance means. Acceptance never, ever makes something fact. Acceptance is you saying or doing something that you say a certain requirement has been met, that you believe that something is fact. I'll give you an example. If I tell my children that they are to do A, B, and C before I get home from work, whether they accept that or not, it's fact. You know what acceptance on their part is? It's understanding that the requirement set by Dad is valid, and what he said will be executed, and that what has been spoken is, you know, the truth. Well, think about what Peter is saying here. "He that feareth God and worketh righteousness is accepted with him." There's a minimum There's a baseline requirement that has been met, that God accepts a certain thing. He accepts a certain requirement that has been fulfilled, that somebody has feared God and worked righteousness. Well, how does somebody fear God? How does somebody work righteousness? If you and I want to be accepted with Him, if we want God to be pleased with what we're doing, then what is it that gets us there? How do you and I fear God, and how do we work righteousness? Well, the first thing we have to understand is that by nature, we cannot fear God. And I don't mean that in a mean way, but if you look at Paul's explanation of a natural man in Romans 3, where he says there is none righteous, no, not one, he goes on to say their throat is an open sepulcher, the poison of asps is under their lips, with their tongues they have used deceit, their feet are swift to shed innocent blood. And what's the last thing he says in that list of our condition? He says, there is no fear of God before their eyes. You know why a natural man doesn't fear God? Because he's incapable of fearing God. I mean, it seems to our mind as God's people, does it not? It just seems so obvious that this universe was made by a creator, right? I mean, it just seems so obvious. I mean, the beauty that you see, the intricacy, I mean, not just the grand expanse of the heavens, you know, the stars in their places and the bodies in their courses. But you get down into the very minute, and things are so complex, down to the human eye or the human chromosome. There's just seemingly no way that somebody could believe something that complex and yet something that expansive just chaotically came to be over a long period of time. But men do. You know why? Because when they see God's work, they don't honor it as God's work, but rather make gods for themselves. What does Paul say in Romans 1? That when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, but made unto themselves gods after the image of man, and four-footed beasts, and fowls of the air, and creeping things. That's what man does in his natural state. So for somebody to fear God, he has to have something more than a condition he is born with in this world. When you and I are born naturally, all we have is a natural nature, a natural spirit, which is incapable of receiving spiritual things and incapable of fearing God. So how does it, first, that you and I are even capable of fearing God? Paul says in Ephesians 1, starting in I guess verse 4, what we need is verse 6, but this is all one sentence. The sentence actually begins in verse 3. But let's start in verse 4. Ephesians 1 and 4 says, "According as He hath chosen us in Him, before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame, before Him in love, having predestinated us into the adoption of children, by Jesus Christ unto Himself, according to the good pleasure of His will, to the praise of the glory of His grace, wherein He hath made us accepted in the Beloved." What was a requirement that had to be met for acceptance? That God had to take us, choose us, plan us, and do it in a particular way. He chose us where? In His Son. When did this happen? Before the foundation of the world. And He predestinated us to be conformed to His Son's image. That we wouldn't just be in His Son, but that we would bear His image, and that one day we would be with Him in heaven for all eternity and in immortal glory. That being the case, why was this done? Was it done because of who we are? No, it was done according to His good pleasure, to the praise of the glory of His grace. What was the requirement that had to be met? God had to be satisfied and honored by what is done. If you and I were to try to honor God, if you and I were to try to do something that was pleasing to Him, what's the very best that you and I could bring? I don't know what your most prized possession is. I don't know what it is that you have in your house that you hold most dear. I actually have a treasure in my house. It's not worth anything to the world, but it's worth a lot to me. A couple months ago, I was back home where my mom is. She's moving. And I was prowling through my dad's study trying to get anything that I personally wanted. And while I was there, I found something in dad's study that I did not know that he had. But as soon as I saw it, I said, "That's mine." I didn't even give my brother an option. I said, "That's mine." It was Elder Leon Clevenger's personal copy of the Good Old Songs. Has his unique scrawl on the front of it, has an inscription in the front cover where Elder H.J. Donahue, who my dad knew in Arizona, was given that book by Elder Clevenger on he and Sister Clevenger's 75th wedding anniversary. For those of you who may not be familiar with the name, if you're familiar with the song Traveler or the song Counsel, he wrote those songs. Traveler, my days are passing swiftly by. Counsel, O dear pilgrim, are you troubled? That's Elder Leon Clevenger. That book is precious to me. It's a prize that I now have in my library. But when I look at that, it means something to me. But friends, that doesn't mean anything to the world, right? Doesn't have any value to the world. Means something to me, means nothing to them. Well, think about what the world thinks is valuable. Gold, silver, jewels, wisdom, notoriety, standing, position. Do these things mean anything to God? No. You know why? He's wiser than anybody in this world. He has a greater standing and position than anybody in this world. And He's richer than anybody in this world. So what is it that we have that's even going to make Him say, "Wow, that's something"? I mean, the very richest thing we have, it means nothing in His sight. He owns the cattle of 1,000 hills. He owns the gold of Ophir. He owns the earth and the fullness thereof. What if somebody's got an IQ of 200? What does that mean to one who's omniscient, who knows everything past, present, and future? I mean, God has more and knows more than anybody can offer. So nothing that we could offer means really anything to Him according to nature. So what's the minimum requirement? Something has to be done to His honor, to His glory, to His grace, according to His good pleasure. Who's the only person capable of doing that? Himself. He's the only one who could possibly please Himself in this way. You know, I've been told by some of my oldest friends that I have very high standards. That's probably true. I have very high standards. I have expectations that probably some people don't have. One of my expectations is that when somebody says something, they mean it. And when they've proven they say something and don't mean it, I don't think a whole lot of their word. And that's, to some, a very high standard. But you know, my standards don't compare with God's. You know why? I don't know anybody in this world who hasn't let me down at least once. And I'm sure I've let everybody I know down at least once or more. But what happens when somebody lets you down? Is your best course of action to go, "Well, I'm never talking to that person again. Well, he wants to patch this up. He's going to have to come see me." Is our best course of action to say, Be a cold day in hell before I ever talk to him again. Is that how we should handle that? Now, sometimes that is how we handle it. But friends, think about your family. Mothers and fathers, have your children ever disappointed you? I'm not even going to ask if your grandchildren disappointed you. I know you'll lie to me. I was so thankful that Elder Sonny Huckabee, who is a grandfather, by the way, said in his preaching this weekend, he said, "Grandmothers, you know what that little grandchild's born with? Adam's nature." I said, "Amen." I couldn't believe he said that. I mean, he's an actual grandpa who hadn't lost his mind. Anyway, the point is this. Your children have let you down. You don't have to nod, especially if she's here, but husbands, has your wife let you down? Wife, has your husband let you down? Have your parents let you down? Has your pastor let you down? Has the church let you down? Everybody and everything that we know in this life has let us down outside of God. But we work through those things. We try to get over those things. You know what God will not accept? God will not accept one mistake. He won't accept one flaw. He won't accept one blight, one blemish, or one black mark. We're told in James chapter 2 that he that is guilty in one point is guilty of the whole law. It doesn't matter if you keep 9 of the 10 commandments. If you break one, you're guilty of it all. That's God's standard. That's God's requirement. Who's the only person that can fulfill that standard and requirement? God. Which is why He chose us in His Son to His praise, to His glory, to His grace, and according to His good pleasure. And because of that, and that alone, you and I have been made accepted in the Beloved, in Jesus Christ, because of what He has done for us. So that has to be the starting place. For us to be accepted, be acceptable with Him, you and I have to be accepted in Jesus Christ according to His work and according to His grace. Now, when that happens, when you and I are accepted in the Beloved by God through His own work, what is the next step? The next step, friends, is that something has to be done for us and to us for us to have anything worthwhile of offering. You know, there are things in this, as I mentioned before, things in this world we think are valuable, things that we hold dear, that don't mean anything to God. I love what David says in Psalm 39. He says in verse 5, he says, "Verily every man at his best state is altogether what? Vanity." That's all we are by nature, is vanity. Our very best that we can offer is just vanity in the sight of God. But I submit to you that you and I have something that is not vanity. You and I have something that is not a filthy rag. You and I have something, Brother Jacob, I believe, quoted this in his opening remarks, that God is pleased with. In Romans chapter 12, in verse 1, the Apostle Paul says, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and what? Acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service." Question. The Apostle Paul in Romans 7 says, "I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing." In Romans 12 and verse 1, he says, "Present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God." Is that a contradiction? Whether you know what the answer is or know how the explanation goes or not, the answer should be clear. Friends, Romans 7 and Romans 12 do not contradict each other. One says, "I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing." The other one says, "Present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God." How do we reason through this? Here's how we reason through this. If I was to take, I'll just use this one since we're already using it. If I was to take this cup and I was to take this pen and stick this pen in this cup, the pen is in the cup, is it not? Paul says that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. But you know, there's something else about this cup. If I was to stick the pen in it, that's one thing. But water is inside the cup, correct? Well, what is in our flesh? What is in our flesh is sin. No good thing. What is inside of us His Spirit that He has placed there that is holy and righteous and godly, conformed to the very image of Jesus Christ Himself. Now, you say, but preacher, it says our bodies. I realize that. You know why? Because your spirit does not exist outside your body while you are here in this earth. When your spirit leaves your body, you are dead and your spirit goes to glory. That means for you to be here tonight, what has to be here? Your body. I don't hear this much anymore. I'm thankful that I don't. But it used to be something that, this is before the days of cell phones, before that people sent texts back and forth. They would tell my parents, particularly my father, since he was the pastor, they'd say, well, I'm not going to be there next Sunday. You know, I've got this to do, I've got to do, but I'll be with you in spirit. My dad always threatened, he said, one of these days, I'm not going to show up to church. And when somebody says, Brother Conley, we missed you last Sunday, where were you? He said, well, I couldn't come, but I was with you in spirit. By the way, have my spirit preach. Your body has to be here for your spirit to be here. How is that accomplished? It's accomplished by your spirit and the will of your spirit succeeding in the warfare that your body is here because it was your spirit's desire and your body is here present because your spirit has won the day. You and I have two natures in us that fight all the time. One is the nature of Adam and one is the nature that God gives to us, and they're at warfare. I love the story of it's told as truth, it may just be a legend, but a man who ran a convenience store or a general store back in the days of the frontier, and an Indian came in and laid some merchandise on the counter and said, I'm returning this because earlier today while you weren't looking, I stole it and took it out of here. And the man who ran the store said, well, I didn't see you do it. Why'd you bring it back? He said, two dogs reside within me. One's white, one's black. They fight every day. And the store owner says, well, who wins? The one I say, sick him to. Well, friends, that's the way our lives are. Who wins? The one we say, sick him to. And sometimes our flesh gets the better of us, and sometimes our spirit dominates. If you are here tonight, you know what is evidence? What is evidence is your spirit has been successful, and your body is here, and as such, this is something that is holy and acceptable unto God. How did that happen? It happened because you were made accepted in the Beloved and God put His Spirit within you and you, by your action, succeeded in doing what the Lord has commanded you to do by being here. And while we're here, what is it we're doing? He says in verse 2, to be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, proving what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Friends, God's will is good. God's will is perfect, and God's will is acceptable. But you know what this does? You know what this service does? It proves to us what is already true. It proves to us what is already fact. I am not telling you things tonight, and in so doing, by telling you these things, they become true. I'm telling you things that are already past perfect tense, true, and continue to be true. The gospel doesn't make anything real. The gospel manifests what is already real. The Apostle Paul says that he hath brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. Light just manifests. And what our bodies being here as living sacrifices do is it proves to us that God's will is good. It proves to us that God's will is perfect. And it proves to us that God's will is acceptable. You know what that means? God's will has met the requirement of what needed to be done. And that first requirement that had to be met is that every single blight had to be answered for. Every flaw had to be satisfied. Every sin had to be accounted for. I tell you, God is so much greater than we are because we are so easy to neglect. We are so easy to just sweep away. We are so easy to dismiss. But friends, God is not as we are. He is not a man with an arm of flesh like I have. He is a God of truth. He is a God of judgment. And justice and judgment are the habitation of His throne. You and I cannot possibly imagine just how pure His mind is. We can't possibly imagine just how righteous and spotless He is because we're so tainted in our lives with sin. But I'll tell you what the gospel does. I'll tell you what the house of God and the kingdom of God does. It proves to us in flashes in moments and in seasons just how good He really is. I tell you, friends, I know He's good. I know He's righteous. But you know what the gospel does? It shines more light on just how good He is. Shines more light on just how righteous He is. And it shines even more light on just how acceptable His ways are. Now I have a question for you. Is the gospel being presented so that you will accept it? Or is it presenting it because it's already been accepted? Proving what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. It's already perfect, it's already good, it's already acceptable. It just shows us what is already there. And when you and I come before Him in such a way, it's acceptable unto Him. Holy and acceptable unto who? Unto God. This is a requirement, friends, in God's eyes, for us to be accepted with Him. Not for heaven, but here, while we're in this life. So you and I fear God by being accepted in the Beloved, by having His Spirit placed within us, and by showing forth our diligence in doing what He's told us to do. And what does the fear of the Lord do? The psalmist says in Psalm 111 and verse 9, or verse 10, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Solomon says in Proverbs 1 that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. We're told that the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. We're told that it is a way that does not lead to death. The fear of the Lord is our starting point. And Peter says, he that in every nation, he that feareth God and worketh righteousness is accepted with Him. So if you and I now are at a place where we fear God, and that word fear means to have reverence, respect, honor, give Him glory, how is it that we work righteousness? Again, this can't be in our nature, because our nature, the very best we have is vanity. So what does it mean to work righteousness? What does it mean that you and I are doing things that are somehow pleasing to Him? What it means, friends, is that you and I are doing things that He has declared, and we're doing them for the right reason. Let me give you an example. When I gave the earlier example that, well, I was at work and I told my children to do A, B, and C, the right thing in our house would be for them to do A, B, and C, not X, Y, and Z. Do you want me to be specific? What I mean specifically is, I'm not just telling them to do something, I'm telling them to do these things. You know what our problem is? We don't want to do necessarily what we're told. We just want to do something and say, well, I did something. How many of you ever argued with a teacher and said, well, I don't know why you didn't give me credit for this. I did something. Did you not do that? I did. You know, just count the whole thing wrong. Well, I did something. And I knew good and well I didn't understand a single thing about that problem, and I just did whatever I could think of to do that had nothing to do with that problem. Well, I did something. You know what God is not pleased with? He's not pleased with saying, well, Lord, I did something. The religious world today is out there just doing something. You know what we should be doing? What He has commanded specifically. You know what He's commanded us specifically? He's commanded us specifically to rejoice evermore. That means in your good times, in your bad times, in your ups and downs, in your times of bounty, in your times of famine, to rejoice in what He has done. Because no matter what our condition is, our position remains the same because His position remains the same. And therefore He says, rejoice evermore. You know, one of the things that happened when I was a boy, whether it was with my parents or with my part-time employer or with one of my teachers, when they said, well, why didn't you do what you were told? I didn't feel like it. You know, not feeling like it has never been an acceptable answer in this world. Why should we think it was an acceptable answer with God? You know, just telling God, I didn't feel like it doesn't work. Because, friends, if there is anybody who had a right to say, I don't feel like it, you know who it is? Him. Because you and I don't deserve anything, and He's given us everything. And because of that, God has the right, more than anybody else, to say, I don't feel like it. But you know what God does? God rejoices over us daily. It says in Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 17 that He shall joy over thee with singing. You look at this world in which we live. What is there for God to joy in? I'll tell you what there is for God to joy in. When He looks down, He sees His children with the image of Christ staring back at Him. Paul says in the Colossians, in Colossians 1:23, that it is Christ in you, the hope of glory. God looks down through these bodies of flesh, through these temples of clay, and He sees His Son's face. You know what that is? It's joyful to Him. He sees people that are going to be with Him in heaven and immortal glory, and He joys over us with singing. So God tells us, rejoice evermore. Not an option. Do it. He tells us to pray without ceasing. This one's tough. You know why? Because again, well, we'll try everything in the world except what He told us to do. I am amazed at my children. They will do everything that they can think of except what I told them to do. You know, they know. Just ask, say please, and you're probably going to get it. You know what they do? They walk in and say, I'm thirsty. And I just stare at them. I'm thirsty. I stare at them. Finally say, you have something to drink? Please. Wouldn't it just been easier to do that in the first place? Wouldn't it just been easier to do what you knew was going to get you the drink? But what do? And before you get too hard on my children, I'm about to get myself and the rest of us too. Wouldn't it just be easier to do what God told us to do? Brother Jacob mentioned about people not feeling worthy to be a member of the church. You know what's just easier? Just do what He told you to do. And what did He do? Or what did He tell us to do? To follow His example. What did He do? He was baptized. What else did He do? He prayed to His Father all the time. You know what that means? You and I should pray without ceasing because our example prayed without ceasing. And you know what happens? We're better off. He tells us, rejoice evermore. He tells us, pray without ceasing. He tells us, despise not prophesying. You know what that means? Don't get ill with the Word of God. I was at a meeting in Mississippi a couple months ago, and one of the ministers, he kind of got in trouble. It wasn't me. But he kind of got in trouble because in his preaching, he said, you know, when I read the book of James, I really don't like him. And we were all like, he just bashed the Apostle James. I understood what he meant as he tried to explain it. That when he read the book of James, James was pointing out all the things that he was doing wrong and all the things he should have been doing that he wasn't. James has that effect. You know, James says specifically, he says, a man may say, I have faith and thou hast works. He says, show me thy faith without thy works and I will show thee my faith by my works. Somebody saying, I believe in God. Someone saying that I'm a Christian. And there's never any action to back it up. James says that that faith without works is dead, being alone. That the best way to show somebody your faith is just to show them works that prove and display the kind of faith that God's already given unto us. Well, having said that, there are things that show that. There are things that prove that. But I'll be quite frank, I don't like doing as a man. Do any of you like praying for people who are cursing you? Really? I don't. Do any of you like blessing those that despitefully use you? I don't. How many of you have ever been slapped and said, give me another one on this side? How many of you ever said, when someone went to take your coat, said, well, here, you want my jacket? I mean, those things aren't pleasing. There are things that we don't like when they're brought to light. I mean, I heard it said all my life, and it's undoubtedly true. Old Baptists love it when a preacher talks about sin. They hate it when he gets specific. I mean, you love it when a preacher says, we're all by nature totally depraved. That's right, preacher. And by the way, one of our depravities is gluttony. Stop meddling, preacher. Right? You don't want your sin pointed out. You don't want your problems put on display. But God says, despise not prophesying. Why? Because it's good for us. God has never done anything that was not good for us. Everything God gave us is good for us. And when you and I do the things that He's told us to do, we do works of righteousness because they're God's directives to us, and we do them with a joyful spirit, when we do them with a proper frame of mind, we are doing things that God is pleased with, that God says are acceptable in His sight. I love what David says in Psalm 19 and verse 14. He says, "Let the prayers of my lips and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O God." Paul says in Hebrews 12 and verse 28, "Let us therefore serve Him acceptably and with godly fear." I tell you, friends, if you and I want God to be pleased with us, there are two things, and it doesn't matter what age you are, doesn't matter what gender you are, doesn't matter what nation you belong to, doesn't matter what color your skin is, doesn't matter if you're old or young, doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. If you want God to be pleased with what you're doing, the simple formula is fear God and work righteousness, and you are acceptable with Him. It's not what gets you to heaven, it's what God is pleased with today in what you and I are doing today. It's what you and I do to feel His smile and to feel His pleasure today. Friends, I'm thankful that I'm accepted in the Beloved. I'm thankful that I have been made holy and without blame in His sight. I'm thankful that He predestinated me to be conformed to the image of His Son. I'm thankful that He gave me a spirit that is able to praise Him. But friends, what I am most displeased with is myself and my failure to prove that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You know why? Because so many times I question Him. Lord, are You sure? Lord, did You really mean it? Lord, surely You couldn't have possibly thought that this was going to work. You know, God's ways always work better than man's. Unfortunately, a man's ways are acceptable in whose eyes? His own eyes. But God's ways make even a man's enemies to be at peace with Him. Too many times in my life, when I look at the problems I've encountered, it's because I've been following my own ways. I've been following my own thoughts. Whenever you and I do it God's way, you and I are accepted not in Him, but with Him. You know how you and I are accepted in Him? He took care of that before we were. You know how you and I are accepted with Him? By acknowledging that He is with us and that we are with Him. Paul tells the brethren at Mars Hill there in Acts 17. He says that God is not far from every one of us. He says, but we need to feel after Him if haply we may find Him. The gospel brings things to light. The Word of God brings things to light. One of the things that it brings to light is in your darkest days, He is still there by your side. You know why you don't know it? You know why I don't know it? I haven't done this and reached out and felt to know that He is there. When you and I reach out and feel after Him, He's already with us. But we're then with Him. We're in Him by His grace, but we need to be with Him through our obedience and through our walk. And if we do these things, I can promise you very few things in this life, but I can promise you this: God will smile upon our actions and upon our efforts. You want to be a better husband or a better wife? Fear God and work righteousness. You want to be a better brother or sister? You want to be a better child to your parents? You want to be a better employee to your employer? You want to be a better citizen to your country? Do you want to be a better member to your home church? Do you want to be a better servant to God's kingdom? It's a simple formula. Fear God, work righteousness, and we are accepted with Him. Peter learned a great lesson. He learned that it wasn't based on race. It was based on grace. And the lesson we have to learn so many times is what we have that is worth anything, it's not based on who I am. It's based on the fact that by His grace, I have had these things bestowed upon me. Friends, I'm a nobody, and so are you, because of what our father Adam did. But because of Jesus Christ, our elder brother and our high priest and our husband and friend, you and I are somebody, because He made us somebody. May we act like it and show forth the praises of Him who has called us out of darkness into His marvelous light, and so doing, bring praise, honor, and glory to His good name. May the Lord bless you, my friend.